Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, fungal associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. My name is Alex Croson, and I am alongside co-host of the century, Casey Clapp.
It's a short century, a lot of competitors to go, but I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to have that badge right here. I will have to say, though, Alex, it is a co-host of the century. There's also another co-host of the century.
Who's that?
Alex Croson.
Wow.
The one, the only, the nettable, the settable.
Nettable? My fish?
Yeah. Hey, I was thinking nettable as in like a nettle, but then I kind of messed it up a little bit. Yeah. Let's not look too close into it.
I just want to let everyone know when Casey said, I have my badge right here, he pointed to the fly on his pants.
No, I didn't. How dare you? Yeah, way to take this into toilet humor, Alex. Right, we're 30 seconds into it, and now we're in the trash.
Well, Casey, we are 30 seconds into this episode, and we are 30 seconds into a very special episode because you know what, my boy?
What?
Today, this episode is our 50th episode.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about that. That's such a good point,
and
Alex.
To celebrate, I got a little song.
You did. I saw that you had that out. Oh my God, go for it.
That's as far as I practice.
What is that song?
You know, what's that called? Celebration. Is that
okay,
cool?
It
in the
is.
Game?
Yeah, yeah, that probably is. Honestly, I missed that you even put a tambourine on your foot as a foot stump and tambourine.
Well, it kind of fell flat that you didn't recognize the song, which is not your fault. I would play it on a single melodica.
That's fair.
But it's a big sell. It's a big
this
day,
is.
Case.
You're right. I'm gonna. If I had a popper, I'd pop it right now.
I thought about getting some little crackers, as they call them in the UK.
I have a half a burrito.
Let's pull it. Let's pull either side of it.
Break it in half. The last two bits of a quarter burrito.
Yum. Casey, yes, this is our 50th episode. How
Congratulations.
Does that feel? Congratulations to you.
Oh my God, it feels good. We're talking right now about doing all sorts of stuff. There's lots of things happening. There always is.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, feels good. Never thought we'd be here at this last year.
Yeah. I've said this before, and it's a bit vulnerable to say, but I didn't know if we would last 6 episodes.
Yeah, I remember
that was
said
sort
that.
Of my number,
which is a strange number to be at. But we're happy that you're there.
You know, I had an algorithm.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, just there's some complicated like spreadsheet that you said at the end of it comes out with 23.
It's like a risk assessment thing.
Oh,
I put in our personality traits and our.
I feel like any risk assessment that includes me is going to be like, run.
High risk.
Yeah.
But yes, congratulations, Case.
Congratulations
and,
to you.
Got to say thank you to everybody who listens, and especially, not especially, but a special shout out to the all-timers, the people who were here with us from episode one.
Yeah, right. Whoever commented on that very first post.
Yeah, whatever. Like, however, I'm excited for this.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, oh my God, like listen to it and like gave us a thumbs up. Listen to it, period.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't expect that, honestly. I put it out there and I was expecting like there'd be a couple, like, you know, our friends and family, but apparently a bunch of people who don't know us were like, I'm going to give these guys a shot.
Well, yes, Casey, you brought that popularity with you from... from your wonderful ologies episode.
I guess as it works out, you know what? We're giving people things that are good to have.
Yes.
Trees, tree knowledge and tree things.
We're like Santa Clauses.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, right now I'm working on a talk somehow. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I'm going to work on it. So there's an International Society of Arboriculture conference.
ISA.
That's the one. Now, this is the ISA proper. This is the big one.
Wow.
Not the localized chapter.
Oh, wow.
And they're having a conference. I think it's in Sweden this year.
Cool.
So shout out to our fungal associate in Sweden. I know we have at least one.
Oh, yeah.
Of that.
We have a cone.
Yeah, exactly.
Cone of the Month Club.
Exactly.
Member
I literally just looked at their name today. If I saw it right now, I would say hello specifically. We're going to give you a like somewhere. Either way, so it's in Sweden. So I'm like, oh, I think it's in Malmo. I think that's how you might pronounce that name. So I was like, well, I should try to go. So I'm going to try and put a talk in about why it's important that we're doing this show.
Wow.
Specifically, Alex, why it's important that people also think it's important. Like, what is this show trying to accomplish? And, and what do I think, what do we think it means in a larger sense? So essentially, is it important that you can identify a tree on a fundamental level of like being a good human?
Is that rhetorical?
No. Yeah, I think right now it's rhetorical because I'm still working on the details.
I'll hold off on my answer.
Please do. And save it for the end of the show. But yeah, so I'm working on this this big thing, and ideally more talks like it will come down the pike. So
sweet.
This show, Alex, has changed my entire perspective because initially I'm just happy to talk about trees. Everyone kind of knows that, you know?
Sure.
But with such a response that we've had and the fact that you yourself are becoming very quickly a dendrologist, it's just, it's kind of stunning to me that maybe other people would also be interested in like, oh, maybe is this, could this be something that's like a little bit like more important than just like, oh, cool, I'm interested in this, I'm going to just press play.
Yeah, you're onto something, Casey.
I'm hoping that we are onto something, Alex.
I think it would be wrong to not morally capitalize on our platform and our position in the podcast world to, if we just sat back and said, okay, we're fine with just having a podcast.
Yeah.
It would be silly, I think, to do that. We have a lot of plans for some big, fun things. We've executed a lot of them this year.
We did last year, the solstice celebration.
Oh, yes, last year. God. Excuse me.
Yeah, we can't give away the ghost.
Wow, the solstice celebration went perfectly, didn't it, Casey?
It was incredible.
It's in 2 days, and Casey and I are shitting our pants.
Yeah, we do things a little bit early right now. It's only a week early than normal.
That's true.
Anyway.
Casey, we got a great tree to talk about today.
Yes, we do, Alex.
I'm not extremely familiar with this tree. However, I know there is one just a block away from my home.
Sure is.
You and I commented on it almost constantly.
Yeah.
It is a gorgeous, humongous European beech.
That's the one. Are you excited, Alex?
I'm excited.
I'm excited for this for two reasons. One, it's a great tree. Happy to talk about it.
Yeah.
Number two is that this tree, I think everyone else will be excited about. Number three, I lied. I have three things.
Okay.
Whilst doing research for this here arboreal thing,
yes,
I have learned a lot more about this tree than I thought I would know. I think it's going to make this discussion quite a bit more richer.
Wow, fascinating.
I've also learned there is an aperitif that I could have made for this if I had thought about it, but I didn't, and so we are not drinking a nutty beech aperitif. We'll try it next year.
Okay.
We have to wait till the leaves
next
are on.
Next year. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So
the springtime.
I guess, yeah, springtime. Not next year, the next the growing season.
This coming spring.
Yeah. It's in gin, though, so that's going to, you know, if you don't like gin, it's not really going to be worth it. We'll tell you what it's like.
Okay. Well, Casey, before we started recording, I told you that I had one joke I wanted to tell.
Yes, you did.
This episode.
All right. Should I get ready right now? Okay. For a second, I thought you were just going to like pepper it in somewhere. Then I had to be like, oh, that's the joke.
No. This is not a tease moment.
Okay, gotcha.
Case, isn't it true that another common name for the European beach is the nude beach?
Yeah. I don't even know why it would be a yes or a no to that question. I didn't know what to answer.
Because there are so many nude beaches in Europe.
Yeah, that's... Oh!
And I'm playing with the spelling of the word beach.
Yes, okay, so I got the beach part. No, I didn't. I was thinking, I think I put it all together. Tell it again.
Hey, Casey, isn't it true that another common name for the European beach is the nude beach?
Gross, Alex.
My chest feels warm.
That's a good joke. I like that joke. I think that's a good one.
Casey, as we do every episode, let's imagine that you and I are walking not one block from my apartment.
Okay.
And we see this glorious European beach. Maybe we're also in Europe. Who knows? We have a Pacific Northwest bias anyway.
Hey, that is true. Yeah, people have called us out for that, and the answer is, of course.
So, Casey, let's ID this tree.
Woo! All right, so here's the first thing you're going to notice. You're going to walk up, it's going to be a big tree.
Yeah.
It's going to be a large tree, and usually we start with other things. I have to start on this one with the bark. The bark is what sets this tree apart.
Wow.
Now, the reason I say that is because this is a big tree. So when you're walking up, the first thing you're going to probably see is the trunk of it at like your face height.
Sure.
This beech tree, as well as the American beech, and I'm pretty sure other beeches, but funny enough, I have not seen. There's a couple different species of them. But I don't know that I have seen any more than just these two, which I find curious now that I'm thinking about it. You ever have a realization as you're saying something?
Yeah, every day.
That was it. Every day. Well, this is one for me. So, as it turns out, you're walking around, and you see this big, gigantic, circular stem, and it is like bone white gray.
Mm.
It's not as white as like a paper birch or an aspen or anything like
that. Sure.
But it's like this elephant gray, and it even looks like a base of an elephant, like a column-sized elephant leg foot.
Yes. Does it have a buttress base, Casey?
Yes, but not like an insanely buttress base, like not like a spruce. That spruce really have like very fluted bases that come out.
Mm-hmm.
Tropical trees do this way often. But it does. It has like the kind of normal amount of like just
a little,
comes out.
Little bell bottom.
Little bell bottom right at the base, you know, little toes coming out, making sure everything is solid.
Hey, a bell bottom with the base. Speaking of cool in the gang.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is, I'm feeling, oh, is that? So, the next thing that you're going to see about this tree, what?
Sometimes I interject and then I immediately feel guilty.
I know, and I always have to just be like, no, I loved it.
It's my show too.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm always loving it. So, you're watching, you look at this big beech tree, you see this big stem, this column.
Yeah.
Very gray, smooth bark, maybe a little bit of white lichen patches on it here and there. You look up and you're just like, wow, this is like stunning. You see this gigantic crown. Usually those crowns come all the way down to the ground level.
Mm.
Mostly, you know, if they've been pruned up, that's pretty good, but like they'll be wide and they'll be all the way down the sides of the tree. And you'll see alternately arranged leaves. The thing about these leaves, though, is they are a beautiful, lustrous green on top, a very light kind of muted green on bottom.
Hmm.
Alternately arranged, popping out of there, and they're simple leaves that are very like standard leaf. I think that's the best way to describe it. They have sometimes little teeny tiny hairs on younger leaves that come off right on the margins. But other than that, they have no serrations. They are undulating, though. So they kind of have a waviness going along them as they go down.
I love that look, man.
It really is a spectacular look. This tree pulls it off like crazy.
I think the tree that exemplifies that waviness, which I think we should call ruffles.
I think we should. It's a ruffled beech.
A ruffled leaf.
Yeah.
Is the catalpa. The catalpa does that really well.
It does. I think it does. Yeah, they kind of hang down a little bit more, so I kind of see them. But they're like big, so like the undulations look almost like sand dunes.
As
opposed to like little riffles underneath water.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but you're not wrong. You're right.
Thank you.
So the big thing about this is the European beech, which I should note is Fagus selvatica.
Mm.
Fagus being the Latin term for beech, and selvatica meaning of the forest. So this is the forest beech.
Okay.
So I think we might have brought this up on a couple other trees. You know, like Pennsylvania?
That's right. I was trying to think. We've talked about the etymology of the selvatica before.
Yeah.
Sylvania is Sil means forest.
Exactly.
So Pennsylvania is Penn's Forest.
Penn's Forest.
Which is the last name of somebody
William Penn
founded Pennsylvania.
Yep. That's the guy, that nice Quaker. City of brotherly love, Philadelphia.
I'm sure he was a great guy.
Hey, I don't like it, right? I will move on. But they have veins that come out. Those veins run parallel to each other.
Okay.
Coming off this mid rib or this mid vein on the leaf. Now, they come out and the European beech has 5 to 9 vein pairs coming on the leaf. The American Fagus grandifolia, which means Fagus big leaves, mm-hmm. has 9 to 14 pairs.
There's a great ID qualifier.
That's exactly it. If you're looking at it, you want to know, you're like, okay, smooth bark, these big lustrous leaves.
Yeah.
Then the last thing to look at is they have really long cigar-like buds.
Wow.
Like maybe about an inch long. Like they're really, really long and pointy.
Okay.
Kind of like if you take a piece of normal like printer paper, mm-hmm. and you roll it up and then you kind of like pull it so it like becomes a cone rather than like a little cylinder.
Got it.
When you pull that cone up and you make it as tight as you possibly can, but it's still really skinny. So a long, skinny cylinder point cone right at the tip.
Great visual analogy.
Yeah, there you go. Imbricate cone scales, which means the cone scales overlap. So you get this really beautiful kind of like, almost looks like a paper mache thing, like a dunce cap that's really tall and skinny.
You said cone scales?
Sorry, I meant bud scales.
Whew,
thank you.
Casey. Whew. You almost blew my mind.
I almost blew my mind, too. Everyone was just writing that down, and they're just like, oh, what kind of tree is this? Yeah, Linnaeus was freaking out. Yeah, so you have those long cigar-like buds and these big lustrous green leaves, and then you count those individual veins, you know that it's going to be the European. If it has 5 to 9, it's going to be the American. If it has 9 to 14, and the last bit is they have flowers. Who cares? There's little flowers. Like, okay,
wow.
There's some flowers here. Some flowers.
Dismissive there. Of the beach flowers.
There's just not a whole lot. Like, they're not incredible flowers. Like,
let me Google and give my take.
Yeah, they just look like little fuzz balls that kind of pop out.
Oh yeah, they're like,
yeah, that's kind of it.
They're like, they look a little half-assed.
Yeah, they really do. It's kind of like, yeah, let's put all of our beauty into everything else. Flowers, no one cares.
You kind of got to like look at it for a second to like orient yourself. Like, yeah. Where is the flower? Oh, there's the flower.
Exactly. You see like a little bit of pollen kind of at the end of the male flowers.
Yeah it looks a little, it's like a little shaggy fluff ball.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And you just kind of shake it, the wind blows it, and then you get pollen that goes to the other trees nearby. You get your beech nuts as a fruit.
That's a utility flower.
It totally is. It's a utility flower. They put no effort into it. They just decided we're going to make it work, and that's going to be it.
Let's talk beech nuts.
Beech nuts are edible seeds inside of these fruits. Now, the family Fagaceae is the larger family that includes oaks and chestnuts.
Okay.
So,
totally.
This big family, if you look at the what it looks like, the beech nut. The beech nut opens up and it has kind of these capsules. These capsules stay closed and they have little spikes on them. They're mm-hmm. not like spikes that would hurt you. They're just general spikes.
They're just pointed at one
end. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're just pointed at one end. They'll give as soon as you give a little pressure to them. They open up in four. So you have one opposite little like capsule sort of, they're like, I don't know. I'm trying to think. They look like an escape pod, kind of like,
yeah,
kind of like opening up, or like some alien, like some alien pod, honestly, is what I think about them.
What this pod looks like is like maybe like a flower from like a man-eating plant flower, yeah. That like splits open in four. You know?
It does. I see that, and I also see like it looks like they have eyelashes on it, so I kind of see like weird eyelashes. So my imagination kind of runs wild with these.
Maybe just Google these.
Yeah, Google them and then tell us what you think they are. So the inside, though, that little seed, that's mm-hmm. the beech nut, officially speaking. You break it open, and the seed coat on the inside, or the little seed bit on the inside, like the flesh, you can eat it. Totally edible.
Is it good?
I've never had it. I'd like to try it, though.
Okay.
Because apparently it was good enough that people were like, we're going to take this and potentially like carry it with them and plant these trees everywhere.
Mm.
We don't know this for sure, so we're going to get into that a little later.
Casey, I have a question.
Yes.
It's hypothetical, basically.
All right.
This is related to the chestnut, Fagaceae.
Yes.
And this beech makes nuts.
Yeah.
Beech nuts.
Mm-hmm.
One word.
Yeah.
Why is the beech not called a beech nut tree?
That's a good question.
Wrap your brain around that one.
Why is it not? Why do we just call it the beech tree?
Yeah.
But then
you don't call it the chest tree.
Yeah. Why? We should call it the chest tree. Yeah, the chest tree has chestnuts. Duh.
Right.
That's a curious question.
Something needs to be looked into here.
Yeah, we just call it the beech tree. You know what? Actually, Alex, I might have a related question. I might be able to do this.
Okay.
So the chestnut, I don't know where that term chestnut came from, other than the fact that castanea, castanea is the Latin for it. And so the Latin for it might have been for chestnut, meaning the nut that comes from the tree. So they would initially, their word is saying chestnut. That's the thing that we eat. Therefore, this tree is a chestnut tree. But if the etymology came from the tree first and the nuts second, then you would say, oh, this is called the beech. Its etymology, funny enough, this has been done, comes from the word book. We're going to get into that in a second, though.
Wow.
Not to give anything away.
How exciting.
So if you already say, oh, this is the beech tree, the book tree, essentially, then the thing that comes from it is the nut of the beech. So therefore, we just see the tree first, the nut second.
It's a chicken and egg thing.
I think it is. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So
fair enough.
That might be the answer. I don't know for sure.
I'm going to start calling them book nuts.
Yeah, I'm going to start calling it a chest.
Mm.
Just a chest.
There's a chest tree.
A chest tree. Okay, so the last thing about these little nuts is that they would fall out, and then they would be underneath this dense canopy, right?
Okay.
And this is kind of what makes this tree interesting. If we're walking through a European forest instead of just next door, we would potentially see a forest, if it's old enough, of nothing but beech trees.
Wow.
Oak trees, hornbeams, this, that, here, kind of spread out, maybe a few.
As you've said before, Europe at one point was just one giant forest.
One gigantic forest.
Yeah.
Now, that gigantic forest in the like the northern section of England, say, has way more oak trees, almost no beaches at all.
Okay.
Allegedly. Mm. As you go further south, beaches make up like 10% of the forest type in, say, France and kind of Germany and central Europe. If you go further south, then beaches kind of start rising in elevation up to like 5,000 some feet.
Okay.
Because it gets warmer there. As you go low, you get the kind of that Mediterranean climate. For those of you who have not been there, it's California. That's essentially what the Mediterranean climate is. Warm and dry with these kind of almost arid, but not quite arid kind of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, the beech trees want a little warmer. So they, more water. So they climb up in elevation where you get a little bit more rain. So you start getting these forest mixtures where if it's left for long enough, this tree ends up dominating a forest where there are oaks and other plants and things because they are amazingly shade tolerant.
Wow.
They will grow, that little beech nut will fall. If it doesn't get eaten by a little pig or, you know, a deer or something like that, or a human,
right,
then that little nut will turn into a new beech tree. That new beech tree will grow up and it will slowly take over the forest that it's in, which in some instances people are like, well, of course, that's exactly what we want, because this is the single greatest tree in the world. It's beautiful. It's great. I love it to death. They're all about it being the dominant thing.
Yeah.
Other people are like, yeah, this tree's taking out all of our oak trees because the oak trees are not quite as good at competing in shade conditions.
Mm.
They are, but they're not like as good as the beeches.
The beech is a bit of a strong arm.
It is, yeah. But it's a strong arm that grows really slow, so it's kind of like an arm that's like pushing you out of the way slowly over, 80 years until you're like, wow, I'm dead. What happened?
Interesting.
That's what happens with these things. And they grow up, and you can see them. If you go to the eastern United States, where we have our native beech tree, you can see that the beech is growing in the densest forests, but they have branches all the way down to the ground. Because they're so shade tolerant, they just don't lose their leaves because of shade, like a Douglas fir would.
Right.
Douglas fir has to lose everything below it because it's like, well, I'm not shade tolerant. I'm not getting any energy from this. So they just let them go. Whereas the beech tree would have leaves all the way down to the very bottom.
Mm.
They would just keep growing. So a little sapling would just be fully covered in leaves, the whole entire thing, even though it's like in this thick canopy of other things.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you can always tell beech tree because of that. It's just kind of like a hemlock around here, or a western red cedar, where down big, deep forest, no foliage except for hemlocks and these western red cedars, because they too are shade tolerant, which means they're dominant species in the later successional forest. So if you just let the succeeding happen for as long as you can, these trees will grow up. Everything else that is early successional will pass away and slowly decompose and die, get outcompeted, and the things that will live and survive will be the beeches, and they can self-propagate because if one tree takes over and starts shading, the other trees that grow below can take those shade conditions and they can continue to grow up. So you can kind of get these things that start repeating themselves. So it's like a cycle that goes, and then once it gets to a certain point, it just self-perpetuates until some big, huge thing comes through and kind of starts that cycle over again with new trees.
It's very admirable of the European beech.
You think so?
I think so. It's not flashy. It just keeps pushing, keeps going.
It's so funny that you say that, Alex, because I think that so many people would say this tree is extremely flashy.
Well, that's a difference of opinion there.
Have you heard of the book The Hidden Life of Trees?
I have.
Yes, we've talked about it. It blew the world up in like 2017, 2018.
Right.
That guy, Peter Wallenben, is talking about the European beech. That is his main focus. Basically, he wrote a book that is explaining why the European beech is the best, most perfect thing in the entire existence of the world.
The payoff to this lead up after the break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts. So you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees, get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates. Sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking European beach or nude beaches, as I call them.
Fagus sylvatica.
Wow. Casey, during the break, we read a little article about the etymology of the word beach and its relation to the word book. May I?
You may.
It's. I'm not going to read this whole thing, obviously, but basically it supports the idea that the word beach, that the word book, rather, comes from the word beach because Western Germanic peoples used beechwood to inscribe runes.
Yeah.
So that's really fun and cool.
And you know what else is kind of interesting about this, which is somewhat fascinating for me, is that the beech bark, remember I told you, is really smooth.
Yeah.
This is one of the classic examples of a tree that gets written on with people carving into the bark.
Oh, okay.
Not only that, but it would also last for a really long time, just kind of the way the tree grew. If you carved into it, it would kind of expand a little bit.
Mm.
And that article that I had you read, which we'll have a link at our show notes at the website, is specifically in response to the book The Overstory. And have you heard of this book? I think we've talked about it a few times.
Oh, have I heard of this book?
Of course you have.
Have I read this book? No.
Yeah, we got to get you on that. So, but he specifically, the author, Richard Powers, says that it's named the beach after book because people would write on it, and then like makes a parallel with the fact that we still do today, like carving into the birch or the bark, the beech bark. I keep on saying birch. God. Everyone's going to be so confused here. How many times have I already said birch instead of beach?
So, I haven't been keeping count.
Yeah, don't start now. So it's one of these trees that has an interesting history, Alex. And this is one of the very, very first like bits that comes down to it, is that this tree is from Europe. As we've discussed, it is a nude beech. The nude beech from Europe is a tree that's existed there for a really long time. We have fossils from even beech species that were in Oregon here like 50 million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an old species of tree, old genus of trees. And the fact that we are still like planting it and everyone still thinks it's great. In fact, I'll give you another example. I told you that people still think that this is like one of the best trees in the world. Well, the Arbor Day Foundation says that they name that this beech is probably described as the finest specimen tree available.
Wow.
Full stop. That's what they say. Not here, not there, not somewhere, period.
I mean, that's a really high honor.
The finest. This is the Arbor Day Foundation. And then tree expert Michael Durr, who's written a bunch of books, like, and also his famous book is Manual of Woody Plants.
Ooh,
which
wow.
is like a huge, huge tome about every woody plant, all the different cultivars. It's like the standard go-to resource.
Jesus.
If I showed it to you, you would immediately hand it back to me. Like, I don't want this. It's not quite that bad as it sounds, but it's not great.
Yeah. However, sounds like a lot.
He also loves to add in his opinions on things where he will say, meh, mostly this tree is overplanted, pretty awful. The flowers aren't that good, and people usually plant it in poor ways. And like, he'll editorialize as much
Wait
as he
a minute.
Wants.
A tree expert likes to interject his own opinions into
Honestly,
something?
Yeah, yeah. Swipe this from out of right beneath him, didn't we?
This is not something I'm familiar with.
Michael Durr has an opinion on this tree. He says, so beautiful that it overwhelms one at first sight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Are you that's the level we're talking about.
I mean, I sort of get that even from my small interaction with the beech tree down the road from me.
Yeah, it's just kind of stunning, right?
It really looking at it gives me not vertigo, but something related to vertigo.
Ooh.
Where I'm like, wow, that's so big. That's like a huge, huge object.
It's giant.
Yeah.
And it's also like a gorgeous, huge object where you're just like, man, I'm just like, it's so symmetrical and like the angles and it, like the whole thing looks like an architectural masterpiece of,
yes,
you know, but also like there's a certain amount of chaos to it, but that chaos always kind of comes down together. I gave a description about how branches work one time, and it's essentially the idea that you have from the top a big tree looks like absolute chaos, like there's just a million branches going in every direction, there's 1,000 leaves on every little twig. How does that all work? But if you just follow it down,
right,
it's completely controlled. Like there's a very obvious solution that this tree has come up with, and this is the chaotic, you know, end result.
Sure.
That's, I think, exactly what people see in this tree. Like it's the exemplifying object to show that concept of controlled chaos. Not controlled chaos, but like informed chaos.
Sure.
You know? Does that make
informed
sense?
Informed chaos. That's great.
Yeah. I hope that can, like, someone's relating to this somewhere. Maybe.
Can I do something?
Yeah, of course.
I'd like to give the term informed chaos Croson's stump of approval.
Fagoosh. Look at that. Man, every now and then I get one of those, or you get one of those, and then it just makes me feel good.
Makes
me feel like we're on to something.
Well, let's talk beach, Case.
Okay, so you remember the Ice Age, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy, what a time.
Yeah, it was really cold. Man, a lot of sweaters.
Bring a jacket.
Yeah, right. So the Ice Age existed in the late, it ended in the late Pleistocene is we decided it's called an epoch.
Yes.
Epoch. I like to pronounce it epoch because I like Ewoks. So mash it together, epoch, Ewok. It was the Ewok epoch. And during this Ewok epoch, the Pleistocene, there was this Ice Age. It was about 202.6 million years ago to essentially 11,000 some years ago, like just shy of 12,000 years ago.
Wow.
That was this whole big epoch.
It's a chunk of time.
It's a pretty good chunk of time. And what happened during then is we had the classic Ice Age, quote unquote, because there were actually many small Ice Ages where you had these glacial maximums and then the interglacial periods, which are like what we're in right now could just be an interglacial period.
Right.
These are people who don't believe in climate change. They're like, well, the climate is just in this big shift of this, you know, we're now on an uprise in heat, and then at some point it'll go back down, we'll have another ice age.
Okay.
That's fair, except this one's certainly human-caused.
Yes.
To be very clear.
Accelerated.
Yes, precisely. So, in way back then, there was these glacial maximums where you had ice age sheets of ice coming all the way down, covering everywhere in the north and a lot of places in the south, and they just kind of went way down compared to where they are today. At that point in time, there was ice covering almost all of England except for the very south.
Mm.
Most of the super northern states, Norway, that kind of thing. And over in the United States and in North America, it came all the way down almost to Seattle. It covered all the Great Lakes, most of Maine and, you know, New England, that kind of area, all of Canada pretty much. So you had all these ice sheets that came way down. All those ice sheets ended up making so the ground or the water, all the oceans were way low.
Mm.
And I'll bring this back. So just hold on. During these ice ages, trees that now grow in the far north would have grown way, way, way further south. Because right now, you go to northern Canada, it's really cold there for much of the year.
Sure.
You have like spruce trees. Way back in like the glacial maximums, when you had these glaciers 20,000, 25,000 years ago, way, 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 way down. That was the last time they were so far low. Then you had spruce trees growing in where today we have like our normal East Coast variety, our normal Central European trees.
Oh, because that was the boundary of climate where they felt comfortable growing.
Precisely.
And it was just a lot lower in latitude.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
You got it all right. So at this point, beech beech trees had to find refuges that were way lower. So you get this, people talk about migration of trees and all these things, and everyone's like, well, trees don't migrate. And then you slap them upside the head because they don't understand how things work.
Yeah.
Thank you. They so these trees were actually way down in the south, and they kind of had this like existence down in the southern area. As the glaciers receded, which in Europe, apparently it happened so fast, like a mind-blowing kind of speed, especially on a level of the entire, you know, geologic time, like between 400 and 500 years, some ridiculous amount of ice just disappeared overnight.
Wow.
And when you think about that, that's like if someone lives to be 100 years old and they watch glaciers like recede by miles within their own lifetime.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And especially you can literally watch the ocean rise. So
that's happening now, right?
It is happening now. But imagine like we have now 100 years worth of data. And you can say, yeah, we've actually seen a level of sea rise by a foot and a half.
I see.
So now every mountain that in every elevation, we have to like limit by a foot because now sea level's higher.
You
know
what
I mean? Yeah. I don't know if that's actually going to happen, but I kind of like the idea. Like for, as punishment, you're now 1 foot shorter. I don't know. It'll be fun. So, what happened is during this time, there were glaciers way down low. These glaciers that were way down low ended up started moving up at a really quick pace.
Yeah.
Really fast. So then the beech trees and all the spruce trees and all the other trees that are down there started moving up north. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm just going to keep walking, keep going up until I can get to my next migration point, wherever the next best place is.
Just because they could?
Yeah. You got good habitat. When glaciers recede, they leave like this glacial till is what it's called. Hmm. And it's essentially all the stuff that they either grind up or they like are pushing around. So then when they come back, they're just leaving this essentially uninhabited landscape that's just open for the picking. So new grasses and small things start colonizing this area. Then these trees start to colonize the area.
I see.
So not only if you have plants moving up into this area, you're also going to have animals. At this time, there was an animal called Homo sapiens. It was also moving up around here. So about 23, 24, 20-some thousand years ago, the most recent kind of evolution or the most recent migration of humans started coming up. It's a little bit of a weird time. I can't really, like, there's a lot of different information I'm trying to put together as a non-expert in a lot of this.
Sure.
It becomes a little bit difficult to figure out. However, people have loved the beech tree for thousands and thousands of years because of those beech nuts that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They're super edible. So the chestnuts, the beech nuts, acorns, anything that you could eat that you could find in the temperate forest here that wasn't going to run away, it was fantastic. Yeah, I'm going to eat this. It's going to be delicious.
Of course. You can't get all snooty.
You can't.
When it's do or die.
Yeah, you're going to get snooty. And when you get snooty, you get left behind by the tribe because they're like, no, eat the beech nut or die.
Wow.
Yeah, at least I assume that's what they would do.
Beech nuts or death.
Beech nuts or death. Death, please. Thank you.
Let them eat beech nuts.
Let them eat beech nuts. You are so French right now. My God. Well, as it turns out, this tree, once it got to kind of its big like resurgence after these glaciers left, it essentially took up all of Europe from France all the way over to Poland and Ukraine, Belgium. It kind of went up to about Denmark, all the way down into the higher sort of more mountainous regions in Italy and Greece, all the way down to like Serbia.
It won the arms race.
It totally did. It took over everything. And it was growing very much with the rest of all of its, forest components. And everyone would use it for everything. They were like, hey, this is beautiful. Turns out they probably, as they started doing, moving up, and this is, you know, we're fast-forwarding and coming back and fast-forwarding and coming back. People would use it, as you said, through this article, they would use it to write on. Either they would write on the bark itself and then like have this be a thing. They would make a table out of it and then write runes on the table or use the table to write runes upon on something else. That's where we started getting the term for book.
Right.
So book came from beech. And then when people were looking at this, they looked at the distribution of the beech tree, and they actually made the argument, which is now they kind of made a defunct argument. But the term for beech that is the same as book apparently also, they were arguing, came from an Indo-European language that started all the European languages and essentially everything that goes down through India and Persian and Iran and all these kind of places, like this huge, big section of the world.
Is this Sanskrit?
No, yes, this is Sanskrit. Yeah, this is Sanskrit would have come from an Indo-European language.
Oh, okay. Or pre-Sanskrit.
Yes, a Proto-Indo-European.
Proto-Indo-European.
Yes, P-I-E. So they actually were using the beech tree and saying, well, because this word came was the basis of all these other words, this was probably where the people were speaking the most widely spoken language. Mm. Then that language ended up spreading to other places. Therefore, we can say that these people initially originated here, at least whoever spoke this language.
Wow.
So it's a fascinating argument. Apparently, they kind of said, nah, not quite. And mostly it's because beech trees have been moved around a lot. So like, well, back then, 20,000 years ago, when people were initially creating these languages, were they speaking a language that was surrounded by, or that had, or were they speaking a language in a place that had beech trees? Because then they would have said, well, then that language would have said the same word for beech tree there and everywhere else as that language spread around. They would have already had a word for beech tree. You know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
Can you say that again?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I kind of talked like this.
No, it's just, I at a certain point I lose you, and then I start thinking about the fact that I lost you.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then I really lose you.
And then
you.
It really goes crazy?
Yeah.
All right, let me redo it.
Okay.
In point A, you have a language that's spoken, and you see a thing, and you name it a beech tree.
Yes.
You name it whatever the word is. I actually don't even know how to pronounce it. I look this up, and I'm like, that it looks like it's boho or something like that.
Right.
No clue. So you have that thing. So, okay, there's a beech tree right there. That language and those people then spread out across Europe. So if they initially started with a term for beech tree, they continually see beech trees. They always will use that same term. As languages change and become their own, then you get those kind of derivatives of one language, just like anything else in a language. All the Romance languages have about the same word for the same thing,
yeah,
but they're just slightly different. Same thing for beach. So they've traced it all back to like this one word. So they said, well, if they have this, then we can probably say that this language came from a place that had these beech trees, and then using the range of beech trees to say this is where these people came from.
Right.
So then you're like, okay, well, and it kind of shifts it a little bit west, so it kind of became more Eurocentric. They ended up saying, no, that's not true, because beaches were actually moved around or didn't exist in these locations because this is an interglacial period, and now everything's confused.
I see. I liked that nice theory before, you know, whoever came along and disrupted it.
I know, it was just a little too simple, right?
Yeah.
But what's funny and why this actually is still kind of relevant today is because in like the last 25 years, people started questioning if beech trees were actually native to certain places to begin with.
Hmm.
Or if they actually were the very first instance of an invasive species being brought by humans.
Wow.
Which is really curious. I don't know if we can technically use these terms, but it brings up a very interesting gray area. So it's a fun theory. Okay, we can't quite match up language and beech trees because at the time, because of these glacial changes, beech trees probably didn't exist in the same exact places that they exist today.
Sure.
So then we're like, well, okay, cool. Well, where do they exist today? Where did they exist back then? And there are now people in England and Scotland who, I think like 25 years ago, someone basically said, well, actually, beech trees aren't even native to England at all. They came after humans came.
Hmm.
So people moved over into the British Isles. Then they brought over with them beech nuts because,
right,
I can eat these. They're delicious. Let's plant them over here.
Wow.
So then they started growing beech trees, Alex.
Cool.
This is what people think. Now, they're not quite sure. And then everyone, of course, as soon as you do that, because this is such an iconic tree, remember, people write entire books about this. It's their favorite tree to climb. It's the gold standard in specimen trees.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you say, that's actually an invasive species, it should be cut down and culled from the forest.
Well, yeah.
People start getting a little bit upset. And they're
I think it's earned legacy status at this point. You know, like,
yeah,
it's been grandfathered in.
Well, and isn't that the curious thing? So now that you say that, Alex, this is very curious.
Mm.
So you grandfather it in. Let's say that the theory is correct, that essentially these glaciers, and this is the reason I brought up all those glacier things, is A, to kind of discuss how these trees have been moved, so
yeah,
that's why you can't really pull the language in.
That's interesting.
We do know, though, for sure, book and beach came from this thing, but that's from a Germanic language, probably happened way afterwards.
Okay.
And also with this birch thing, like the writing trees, things kind of all conflated. However, at the time when these glaciers were at their maximum, they actually covered a lot of Scotland and kind of the northern areas of those islands.
Mm-hmm.
And the water level was so low that there was a connection between Europe and England that now we call the English Channel.
Okay.
So at that point, the water level was so low that you could just walk straight across.
Wow.
If I can walk straight across, a tree can grow straight across or get blown straight across or anything like that. They still can today. It's just not near as common. But essentially, the idea was that humans walked over there, but the trees had not actually grown their way up. They didn't move as fast as the humans did, allegedly. So then when the water filled back up and the glaciers receded, mm-hmm. they did so fast, all of a sudden in a matter of a couple thousand years, what used to be this big wide open expanse of land is now filled with water.
Wow.
So they're like, it's impossible for this tree. There's no genetics of this tree coming from this area. I couldn't find the exact study. I was going to read through this big thing, and it was very complicated. But a bunch of people pointed back to this Harris et al. Study that said something. Then other people looked into it, and it basically, the entire argument boils down to this, that the beech tree, as we know, the European beech, mm-hmm. is native to Central Europe. It did not move up quick enough into the northern reaches as the glaciers receded, such that it is a native species by the time people got there.
Right.
So we then brought it over. And now the question is, if we, 20,000 years ago, Homo sapiens, we brought beech trees into the native forests of these places that before that did not have them, are they considered an invasive species? At the time, we would have been considered essentially dispersers of the seeds of beech trees.
Sure.
We weren't doing agriculture in the way we know it today. We weren't taking it around saying, we're going to plant these trees all over the place. We can't, you know, say for sure what happened exactly, right? So it's curious, if we do that today, we have holly, English holly. We bring that over here, it's planted, it escapes, it's an invasive species. We're now just like vilified. You're the
yeah.
worst. So you get this weird thing. It's like, well, when's that cutoff, Alex? We bring over English holly 200 years ago. 400 years ago, we bring over this other plant. A couple thousand years ago, we bring it over. 10,000 years ago, 20,000 years mm-hmm. ago. So when's the cutoff of what is and is not an invasive species?
Interesting.
What is the line that you draw that takes humans out of the natural like order of things and says, no, you human are no longer a natural part of an ecosystem that is dispersing seeds. A bird eats an acorn and poops out the acorn and that acorn grows. I know that's not exactly how it works. Please don't at us, all right?
It is to me.
Oh, hi, Casey, Alex. I just wanted to say, acorns, that's just how it works.
Okay, Casey can do such a good impression of that because...
yeah, we get a lot of them. Anyway, we're sorry, 70% facts. This is a hypothetical.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this acorn grows. That bird is a natural part of this ecosystem according to our human definition. Therefore, that bird as a disperser of that seed, that's a natural relationship. Therefore, the tree is naturally being spread. If we humans brought that over and kind of disrupted it, would be the term,
mm-hmm.
and artificially brought over this tree, and then that starts happening, we see that as an invasive species bad. So the beech tree is either an invasive species good, a native species, or an invasive species bad, and it would have happened 20-some thousand years ago, or
sure.
maybe we went over there, and then I think it said like 6,000 years ago, or 6,000 BC maybe is when they started finding this. The literature was a bit out there.
I've got a take.
I want to hear your take. This is it's I've said a lot.
Here's the climax.
All right.
I think it's an invasive species good.
Oh, okay.
It's chaotic good in D&D terms.
Good chaos, okay.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting... Well, so I'm going to be a little bit of a cynic here, Casey, and it's going to undercut this whole episode.
Please do.
But I basically think, like, who gives a fuck?
Hey, that's what I'm talking about. Just edit out everything I just said.
No, I think the story no, is very kidding. Interesting. But the idea that people are, that this would be a debate at all
yeah.
it seems extremely irrelevant now in the year 2020.
It kind of does, doesn't it?
It's 2021, whoops. No, it's 2022.
You know, time is timeless. Okay, Alex, let's not even worry
about
it.
Whoa, man.
That's meta, I think is the term.
Yeah, that's something the dude would say.
Yeah.
Time is timeless.
Time is time, man.
No, he'd be like, that's something the narrator of the dude would say.
Oh, yeah, that's
Sam
true.
Sam Elliott.
Yeah, that's fair.
The dude would be like, what the fuck are you talking about, man?
Honestly, Alex, to add to that,
there
are people who also would say this is a stupid argument because the beaches would have moved up in this time anyway. Again, let us reiterate, the deglacialization happened so fast that these trees just didn't move up at the right speed.
Yeah.
Or are still moving up. So they've made it as far as everywhere in Europe, into Northern Europe, but some people are like, in Norway, they're like, well, did these trees actually get transported by Vikings several thousand years ago from Denmark?
Mm.
You know, and so the question is like, well, what happened? And I kind of agree with you, who cares? I, however, do not like the idea that, and I have to wrestle with this is a big problem for me. I have to wrestle with the idea that I do not like taking humans out of the natural system of things. So remember how I was describing that bird that eats the acorn, poops it out? That we could say is natural. If the bird is native, the tree is native.
Right.
But the thing is, that would have happened, you know, thousands of years ago. Everything is constantly changing, and you cannot take humans out of the natural system. We are in it. There's one Earth, as everyone would say.
That's right.
So if we move something around, I think Michael Pollan would be an author who would probably take this kind of look on things. He's like, well, no, we're still, by scientific definition, transporting and dispersing different things elsewhere. We're just really smart and really good at it, where we put them in our pocket, we grow them at nurseries, and we then plant them out on the landscape as trees. Some of them will take root themselves, and they will now naturalize and become a species that grows in an area without any help from humans. Others constantly need that help, but it still is a dispersal of those seeds at a very highest level look from an animal via however means.
Yeah.
So if you don't take us out of the natural system, which we cannot be, we are a part of one big system. And as soon as people realize that, man, they're going to be like, what have we been doing for the last 2,000 years?
Yeah, man.
And we're like 200. But then that's really what's going to change, what I think kind of changes your perspective, where it's like, it doesn't matter how the trees got there. Even if they got there today, in 20,000 years, if humans disappear tomorrow, we have trees from the vast corners of the globe transported to the opposite corners of the globe. And if we just give them a couple thousand years of just fighting it out, the tree species from both of these places will be so intermixed and mingled where you wouldn't even be able to tell that there was different flora from over here and over here. They would be there's one gigantic flora of trees in Europe and in, let's say, Eastern United States, where they're very similar habitats. They, in fact, have similar species composition. They just have different species, the European beach versus the American beach. But then at one point, if they just both grow in the same place and we have all these different plants that people have moved around, 20,000 years from now, we're going to be like, yeah, whatever, they're all native. We have one native flora of the world.
Yeah.
Assuming that things survive that long. But yes, but then why I said I have to grapple with it, Alex, is that I still believe in invasive species.
Sure.
I still don't want these English hollies to become a naturalized system here. They already are, so I guess, you know, my wants and hopes are completely pointless. However, it still is a problem that we're trying to actively fight against. Invasive species are objectively a bad thing for that native habitat.
Yeah.
90% of the time.
So where do you land?
I don't know, Alex.
Incomplete.
It's which is yours. Remember when I asked you about these lines, where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
So for me, you go back 2,000 years ago, let's say we're on a spectrum of interaction with nature, where I and we people now, we are interacting with nature in such a monumental way, in such an intense way. We're not just passively happen to be dropping some beech nuts, you know, and forgetting to eat them. Therefore, now a beech grows there.
Right.
It's in an extension of its natural habitat. I think back then we were more passive about it. So maybe if we're passive about it, it's not considered an invasive species.
Interesting.
If we are active about it, it's an invasive species.
You're thinking intent matters.
Exactly. I think intent should matter a little bit. And then, you know, you can't question or wonder what the intent was back then. Maybe someone did say, me like, I'm going to plant it over here.
Yeah.
In their old English.
Right.
I know it's not old English. Please don't add us.
It sounded like a Gungan.
It probably
was. Misa like the beech nut. Misa going to plant lots of beech nut.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, thanks, Jar Jar. Well, yeah, so that's, I think intent should matter. And if, even if it is an intent, like maybe we don't know that this tree is going to become naturalized and, you know, an invasive plant.
Yeah.
Then that throws kind of my theory all to hell. Because it's like, yeah, if you intently plant purposefully plant something to grow it, and then you just don't even look back, don't even notice. Maybe there also has to be a notice. If it's intent, then you notice something bad. It is bad. If you don't notice, then you go. So it's like, what, ignorance is bliss at this point?
There's a journalistic article waiting to happen here.
Oh, someone's going to listen to this episode and be like, I was so excited, and by the end of it, I was like, what the fuck are they talking about? I was so lost. Sorry, everyone.
Well, Casey, I think now is as good a time as any to get into our review of the European beach with this cavalcade of philosophical questions surrounding our head.
Yeah, someone's gonna need to go back and categorize these for us.
Let's dumb it down and just post a number on this thing.
Yeah, let's really, yeah, okay. That's, yeah, for all the nursery professionals out there wondering if this is going to be the next big beach.
Yeah.
Here, we're going to give you a number so that you can actually, like, put your money on it.
We're going to give some final thoughts and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Case, as our resident expert, as our resident beach enthusiast.
Yeah, that's right. I like nude beaches specifically.
We begin with you. Have you ever been to Rooster Rock?
No, I haven't, but I'd like to many
times.
There's
a nude beach over there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know lots of people have been, but I just haven't done it myself. Nope. Like a fool.
We gotta record a live episode there.
Yeah, now that's not to say I haven't been nude on a beach. I just don't know if technically that makes it a nude beach.
Wow.
I don't know.
Casey, clap.
Anyway.
All right, with your review, mister.
So here's my thought. I have a couple thoughts. One, on one hand, this beach is incredible.
Yeah.
This tree is incredible. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. Anytime I'm like, what should someone plant? I think for 10 seconds, I usually come up with a beach.
Wow.
They're incredible trees. They grow amazing. They're big. They can take a bunch of conditions. This is half the reason everyone likes them. There's some old growth forests in Europe that I found. We'll post some notes to that. Are like these wild, beautiful places. When beach leaves drop, they kind of just like carpet the ground thoroughly and uniformly. So it's really beautiful. And they have these big white pillars and they kind of decay in cool ways. And they take decay in a really funny way. Like they can just kind of live with a lot of decay before they fall apart. They're really strange trees. They can take a lot of conditions. They're also kind of susceptible to a lot of things. And yet they kind of keep growing. I don't really understand it. They're kind of an enigma. They can somehow keep their elven beauty all the while. I love that. However, I don't like that these trees kind of are a little bit... They take over, and I think if we give them the credit of like such regal trees, which is kind of the term I've used and thought about, everyone looks at them like they're so beautiful. They're the perfect tree to put in this landscape. They grow up. They're the most perfect specimen.
Yeah.
I feel like if you say that to a tree often enough, it's kind of going to kind of go to its heartwood a little bit.
Wow.
And this tree is going to be a little bit like, bitch, I'm better than you.
This tree's got an ego.
I think it does. I think it does. And it's like, that's not language you should be using, beech tree. How dare you? And then you go look in the forests that are like these old, ancient, like UNESCO World Heritage Site forests in Europe, and nothing but beech trees. And I'm like, well, what's the fun in that? Where's all the rest of the trees?
Sure.
The beech trees are like, no. If there were a mishmash of other trees in here, we wouldn't be a UNESCO heritage site.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Right.
And it's like, whoa, there should be more trees there. I think there are other trees that have the same kind of regalness that get passed over for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
I would provide the example of the sugar pine. I think the sugar pine is a tree that is massive. It has great proportions and it just looks spectacular. The Sitka spruce, another great example of a tree that has that kind of je ne sais quoi that you plant it as a specimen or you see it growing in a situation, you're just like, Oh my God.
Well, those are also both conifers.
They are. So I guess that's the thing. Well, where's the conifers at? You know, where's the UNESCO heritage site for European conifers?
Well, you got your Western reds. There are kings of the conifer world.
Yes, that is true. I accept that. So I guess I'm thinking that.
Sorry, your cones are your own.
Hey,
I don't know what I'm doing.
I appreciate this.
I just felt passionate suddenly.
The elm tree is another example. The catalpa. Where's the catalpa world heritage site?
I do
site?
Agree with you on that, Casey.
So I'm going to give the
Casey's
European
fervent.
Beach. Yeah, I'm really torn on this because, like I said, I choose for this tree at every opportunity. But I feel like you got to knock this tree a little bit because it's getting a little higher than its britches. I'm giving it 6.5.
Casey, I'm stunned.
I know. And you should be stunned. I want everyone to plant this tree, but I want to know that you know that I know that you know that this tree comes with a little bit of a back pocket of better than you.
My jaw dropped.
I did. I saw that. And you know what? I like Peter Wallenben's book. I thought it was nice. It was a nice book about beech trees.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? There are other things growing in the forest, Ben, and I'm sorry, Peter. So I know he also knows that because he talks about this, but he literally in the book is like, these oaks grow up and they just kind of get so trashy and they fall apart. But the beautiful beech trees, they grow up and take over and grow forever. And I'm just like, come on.
The beech purist.
How dare you? Yeah, he's a beech purist. And I think there's a lot of beech purists out there. And I'm going to be a contrarian to a beech purist.
All right. I
don't know if that's the right usage of that term. But as we learned today, words can be changed.
Oh, boy. Well, 6.5 Golden Cones of Honor?
Yeah, this is a complicated... This is, I think, going to be our most controversial episode so far.
For the European beach from Casey Clapp, famed dendrologist Casey Clapp.
Could I also be famed glaciologist and anthropologist?
No, not yet.
Dang it.
Perhaps infamous dendrologist Casey Clapp after this episode.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Now, Alex, as a purveyor of fine things, as one who sees purple everywhere because that's just the way you look at the world royally.
Oh, yeah, sure.
What do you think of the purple beach? Coincidentally, also purple. It adds to it.
The purple beech?
Yeah, there's a variety called the copper beech, which I believe is the one that's growing right over here next to your place.
It's a variety.
Yes, and it grows with these very nice purple leaves and is simply stunning.
It truly is.
In its monarchness.
I thought maybe you were talking about the crimson maple across the way as well.
No. But they have also a very, purple. Very similar color. Yeah. So, Alex, in your infinite glory and your eye to see things that I just, for whatever reason, cannot appreciate.
Okay.
What do you think of the beach?
I don't know how to take that. The European beach.
In a positive way. Take it positively.
I learned so much about the European beach. I learned too much about the European beach today. I had a bit of a shutdown.
Yeah.
You know, you open too many programs on your computer and it just shuts itself down.
Do you know what the problem is? As I was opening those programs, my brain was also shutting down. I was like, what year are we in right now?
Your CPU was slowing down. My CPU was completely overloaded. although I'm sure there are plenty of people who listening whose CPUs could handle such.
I certainly hope so.
It was an amazing story, Casey. You did a great job. It's nothing against you. It's only my own capacity for information, especially tree information.
Sure.
The European beach. I loved when you mentioned that it has sort of this elvish quality. I immediately started thinking about that and how these elves are these ancient beings who, you know, I would say have a right to be the most popular person in the room.
Oh, you think so? It's a right, not a privilege.
I think so. They're gorgeous. And I'm talking about both elves and beaches.
Yeah,
to
I was going
to
say,
right
I believe
now.
You're now just, those have morphed into the same thing.
They're ancient. They're gorgeous. They give back.
Their buds are pointy like elvish ears.
That's right. Boy, I am now taking the stance that to hate on beaches is a bit of a hipster move.
Wow.
And
oh
a bit of a try-hard, a bit of a try-hard thing. I think beaches have seemed to enchant some people. Your arborist, your tree-climbing friends, certainly the author of Plants Stories.
The Hidden Life of Plants Stories, yeah.
Boy, I think it. Yes, it is a bit of an egotistical tree. But has it not earned its ego? Sometimes an ego is just an honest opinion of oneself.
Huh. Okay. Yeah.
Casey, I'm going to give the European beach, or as I like to call it, the nude beach, 9.3 golden cones of honor.
9.3.
Like, it absolutely deserves it. I'd give it a 10 if you had given it a 10, so we could have had 10s together.
Really? We would have both given it a 10.
Yeah.
All right.
9.3. I'm stunned at your rating. 9.3. I have my melodica sitting here. I was completely ready to play the cone song of honor.
Hey.
It shall remain unplayed today on our 50th episode of Completely Arbitrary.
It's the way it goes. It's the way it goes. And I know that this is a spectacular tree. I agree. You remember when we started doing Michelin stars?
Yeah.
For a little bit? And I'm sorry, Michelin star style.
Yes.
Where you gave the Japanese maybe like a 2 or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I think it's a similar thing where it's just like, you're right. It should be a 10. If it was a little more subtle about it, I think it would probably get its way up there.
Sure.
Sometimes, like, you watch the Olympics. They have those big grand open ceremonies. Mm-hmm. Multiple people can watch the same thing, be like, that was the most spectacular show of theatricness and like coordination and all these things I've ever seen. Then other people could watch and be like, that was so much.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Just Jesus.
Halftime shows.
Yeah, exactly.
One person will say, oh my God, Lady Gaga was such an embarrassment. The next person will say, wow, Lady Gaga has elevated the form.
Precisely. That is, I think, where we're coming at with this. We both watched it. We both loved it. We both carved our name into it, even though you should never do that. Hurts the tree a lot.
We just had different perspectives.
That's
fine. That's the whole point of the show.
Your cones are your own.
Merch now at arbitrarypod.com. Casey.
Wow.
That was our review of the European beach. It's time.
I'm excited.
For Q and A.
Interesting.
Today's question comes from Frenchman Julien Cayer.
Whoa. Hello, Julien.
Maybe Julien. Julien writes, good morning, friends.
Good morning.
I'm already charmed. This is Julien.
Already charmed.
Your arborist French connection from Quebec, Canada.
Ah, yes, hello.
Or Quebec.
Quebec, I think they, yeah.
Here is Julien's question. How does the tinting of the heartwood happen? I.e., black walnut always has a ring of clearer wood around the edge, and it's much too wide to just be the cambium.
Mm-hmm.
What is the process there? Thank you. Love the podcast, and a great day to you, good sirs. Thank you, Julien. Casey.
What a good question.
The heartwood tinting, which is my favorite David Mamet play.
I don't even know what that reference is.
It just sounds like a play by David Mamet.
Oh, God. I love that. That is a great question. And really, the difference that you're seeing, this isn't a 100% full stop, but what Julien is talking about is essentially the difference between what we would call the heartwood of a tree, the sapwood of the tree, and then you have the cambium and everything else outside, the bark.
Yeah.
So the two main kinds of wood, the sapwood and the heartwood, are kind of these two big differences. Heartwood, like for instance in the black walnut, is almost a perfect ring that gets bigger every single year.
Mm-hmm.
And that heartwood is usually very dark. Like it has that's why they call it the black walnut, because it's a very, very dark black center ring.
Okay.
As the tree gets larger, this ring expands out. So you have a comparatively small ring of sapwood or light-colored wood on the outside, and then on the inside, this really, really dark wood.
Okay.
So what they would call this in the sort of tree physiology world are extractives or extratives.
Extratives.
Yeah. And essentially what they are bits that the tree puts into this wood to help it do something. Most of the time, it's not decay. And the reason they do this is that it would be, as the tree gets bigger, you have a couple different things that happen. The first one is that ring on the outside, the cambium, where all the everything happens. That's the physiologically active vascular system of the tree.
Yeah.
every single year, that goes out and develops a new ring and is always on the very outside of that ring.
Mm-hmm.
So as that develops, you have a couple years of wood on the inside. So they're like the most recent rings that are still actively alive. They'll have living cells that will be transporting and storing water and different amounts of nutrients and like stored starches and things like that. So different storage areas for water and for food. Usually it is actually dissolved in water. So just like if you make maple syrup, all that sap is going up. If you just boil that down, it's that really sugary stuff.
Uh-huh.
All that sugary stuff is actual sugar, and it's the carbohydrates the tree's using as energy.
Right.
So that gets kind of packed into the wood, into the sapwood, and they call it sapwood because it's literally wet.
Mm-hmm.
So only living cells can actually hold on to and transport water in the wood. So as that ring of cambium moves out, those rings that are still alive holding water slowly die as well, so that they're moving out right in behind that cambium. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if cambium is year zero, then year as you go in, you have year negative one, year negative two, year negative three as you're going in towards the center of the tree.
Okay.
So those first negative one, two, three, four, fives, usually it's like three or four, those are still alive and they're actively doing stuff with living cells in them. They're wood, and the cells that are alive are waning very quickly. They're dying off a lot because they're only using those a little bit to do almost literally water and some storage. That's about it.
Okay.
So as the tree gets bigger and bigger, the tree is like, well, I'm not using these pipes that are now shut down way inside the wood. And they start to essentially dry out, and they create and they leave as like certain chemicals are kind of evacuated. They leave these extractives. So, you know, like if you dissolve something like salt in water, you boil off all the water, the salt gets left behind.
Right.
It's kind of a similar process.
Okay.
Where the tree is taking all the stuff out of this wood, and then it's depositing all this stuff that's left over. And usually those are different chemicals that are related to making the wood non-edible to fungus.
Wow.
So that's
an antimicrobial.
It's exactly what it is. And the entire idea, of course, is that the tree's no longer actively hanging around there. Like there's no living substances. Now, trees are very complicated, and a lot of different research is coming out to say, actually, like the tree responds even if you nick wood that should be, you know, quote unquote, dead, and wood that is no longer actively used in the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Some research is actually showing if you do end up causing damage to that wood, the tree responds around it, even though it's like, but wait a second, I thought that's dead. I thought it's not connected to anything.
Yeah.
Maybe it still is. So it's still very complicated, and we've tried to like dumb trees down a lot, you know, with those layers, very easy. Oh, here's the sapwood, here's the hardwood. Done,
like,
and
with
over.
This podcast.
Oh yeah, 100% all the time. Yeah. And but so we understand it, but the best way to describe it is that is like the high altitude look at it. Yes, there are these levels, but as soon as you start looking really close at those levels, the boundaries between them, you know, become, you know, who knows where they are.
They
become blurred. And you also lose the idea that everything is acting in a very specific way. You start seeing interactions and small little things. You're like, well, I didn't really know trees could do that. But it's like, Well, I knew they could. I just didn't know the mechanism, and I didn't know how in depth and how much they worked.
Yeah, like if you give me a diagram of a tree,
mm-hmm.
I could probably label all the parts.
Sure.
But if you went out in the forest with me and cut into a tree, I'd probably be completely lost.
Yeah, right?
Like those I'm sure those, with anything, those lines are blurred.
Yeah. Now, you would probably be able to do it with like a black walnut, because that heartwood changes color so drastically.
Okay, so to sum up the answer to Julian's question,
yep,
that tinting is leftover extratives.
Correct.
Like, and I Googled extratives, plant extratives, and it has a list here.
Oh, yeah. What do we got?
Waxes, mm-hmm. fatty acids, mm-hmm. resin axes, mm-hmm. terpenes.
Yeah.
Things like that, that it has extracted everything it needs, everything it doesn't need, it stores in that heartwood.
Yeah.
Which colorizes it.
Yeah, exactly. And essentially those colors are the different chemicals that are left in there.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're actually chemical changes that are inside the cells of the wood itself. So it's not just like something inside a little cup and then that cup is clear so you can see through it. It's that the cup itself has now changed colors.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's exactly what it is.
Cool.
And that would be considered the heartwood of a tree. Almost all trees do it. Some have very small heartwood, some have very big heartwood, and some change colors way more than others. Some barely change at all.
Wonderful. Thank you, or should I say merci, Julien, for your question. If you have a question for Casey about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. Hey, join us on Patreon. Hey, join us on Instagram at arbitrarypod. That's ArbitraryPod. You can get episode updates and photos of trees and such. That's a good way to follow the news of this podcast as well.
That's right.
You can also support this podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You can join the Arboretum and get 2 bonus episodes a month about other related topics and trees, or the Cone of the Month Club and get a unique die-cut cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist every single month in your mailbox.
One of my favorite parts of this entire podcast, Alex.
Me too. I don't want to play favorites, but it is my favorite part of this entire podcast.
Mine is coming up with complex stories and telling them just okay.
Casey, I don't want to hear any of that. You did great today.
All right.
It's our 50th anniversary.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
So what'd you get me?
Me. I got you a complicated story that I'm going to tell poorly.
Supposed to give me a gold watch.
Is that the 50th anniversary?
I think 50 is gold.
Oh, is it?
Should I Google it?
I just think I learned about those kind of recently. Like at the 5-year anniversary, traditional, do this.
Yeah.
I don't know who came up with these traditions, you know?
Probably jewelry companies.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yes, 50th is gold, Casey.
Xbox has sponsored the 26th anniversary. So now, on your 26th anniversary, it's customary for you to get an Xbox for your partner.
And the 27th is a new controller, so yeah. They can... Casey, you know what the 5th anniversary is?
Ooh, okay, hold on. I'm going to guess. The 5th anniversary is a corn plant.
Close. It's wood.
Really?
Yeah.
What is that supposed to signify? I guess it's like, oh, your relationship's hard as this wood. And then like slowly, at 50 years, does it become hard as gold, which is like not hard at all. You can just rip it in half if you use your teeth.
Well, 75th is diamond.
Wow. So. Okay, so maybe it has this, maybe it kind of does a reversion, it comes back.
I think it's supposed to go up in value. So it's like paper, wood, tin, crystal, china, silver, ruby, gold, and diamond.
Wow. So if you're poor and you have been with this relationship for 75 years, what do you do?
That's you get my coal question. And you say, you this is coal. A form of a diamond.
This is what you've done to my heart over 75 years.
Merry Christmas. Casey.
Oh, good discussion, Alex.
Good discussion. Good 50th episode.
Thank you. Great episode yourself. Thank you for the surprise, Melodica. I'm sorry for the surprise, anti-Melodica.
You didn't know the song I played. You didn't get my joke.
I did get your joke.
It's like the only joke I've ever written.
Yeah, you've never actually said a single joke before. That's true.
And thank you to you for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
That's right. We will. See you later. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.